live in crazy times, don't we? Human decency has gone by the wayside. Evil appears to be winning out. Justice rarely triumphs in the courtroom of reason, or so it seems. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll reminds us that a day is coming when God will settle the score. He's teaching from Revelation chapter 20. In this passage, the writer describes a future moment when Jesus Christ will be elevated to his rightful position, and the enemy, Satan, will be thrown into the abyss. Chuck titled his message, Turning the World Right Side Up.
Revelation 20 introduces to us the coming kingdom age. I'll be reading for you the first 10 verses. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven holding the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he threw him into the abyss and shut it and sealed it over him so that he would not deceive the nations any longer until the 1,000 years were completed. After these things, he must be released for a short time. Then I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of their testimony of Jesus and because of the word of God, and those who had not worshiped the beast or his image and had not received the mark on their forehead and on their hand. And they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. The rest of the dead did not come to life until the 1,000 years were completed. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is the one who has a part in the first resurrection. Over these, the second death has no power, but they will be priests of God and of Christ and will reign with him for 1,000 years. When the 1,000 years are completed, Satan will be released from his prison and will come out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together for the war. The number of them is like the sand of the seashore. And they came up on the broad plain of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city. And fire came down from heaven and devoured them. And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are also. And they will be tormented day and night forever and ever.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To complement this study, our team has developed some spiral-bound workbooks for our Searching the Scriptures Bible studies. To dig deeper into the study of Revelation on your own, you can purchase these printed workbooks by going to insight.org/workbooks. And now, the message from Chuck titled, Turning the World Right Side Up.
What in the world is wrong? Why is it always something? How come things aren't like they ought to be? Remember when you were younger and you were thinking, when I get older, they'll be like I want them to be, rather than the way I have to accept them living in this home. And you only made it worse. Or we all have. There's just something really wrong with the whole mess. And at the risk of sounding pretty oversimplified in my analysis, what's wrong is sin. Sin spoils everything. Everything around us, everything inside us, everything about us. Sin spoils everything. That's what's wrong. Sin pollutes our skies. Sin adulterates an otherwise great marriage. Sin makes us physically ill and emotionally weak. Sin causes sewage to be dumped into otherwise beautiful streams and rivers. Sin brings wars and rumors of wars. Sin creates and cultivates corporate greed. Sin uses an excellent mind to devise an ingenious tax fraud. Sin prompts darling little children to disobey. Sin corrupts the legal system, prompting courts to make wrong and sometimes outrageous decisions. That when we sit at home and read about the decisions in our newspapers, we shake our heads and cluck our tongues. Well, if we just boil it down to simple answers set forth in the Bible, which I know, is not acknowledged and not recognized by this crazy world we live in. If you boil it all down, there are three answers. First, Satan is alive and well on the planet. We believe, according to the scriptures, that he is a real being. He's not a figment of imagination. He is a living being, supernatural, created originally by God as the highest of God's creations, Lucifer, son of the morning, who out of pride overthrew or attempted to overthrow the authority of God, and he was cast out of heaven before there ever was an earth, and with him came a third of the angelic beings who then became his emissaries or demons. So we believe there is a devil, and we believe he has his demons, and we believe that the whole world lies in the lap of the wicked one. 1 John 5:19 calls it power. The whole world lies in the power of the evil one, lies in the grip of the evil one. Everything about us is tainted by the touch of Satan. The culture, the direction, the system, the thinking, the actions, the motives. Satan touches these areas because he is alive and well on the planet. He may be invisible, but he is very influential. He is very persuasive, and he is very effective, winning more often than he loses for the time being. Second, things are like they are because Jesus is not in authority on the earth. Remember that. He may reign over all things, but he has relinquished. He has allowed Satan to have his way in many ways on this earth, so much so that Paul calls Satan the god of this age in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. I think James Russell Lowell is correct when he said, "Truth is forever on the scaffold, wrong is forever on the throne." Because Jesus is not enthroned, mere human beings who don't know Jesus are, and when that happens, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Jesus isn't in charge, and because he's not, the world is upside down. Third, because unrighteous people are in the majority and usually in authority. Unrighteous men and women are in the majority and often in authority. I did not say ignorant people. Many of them are very bright, very well educated, very competent as far as the system of the world is concerned. I did not say insincere people. Most of them are very sincere. I didn't say inexperienced people. Those in authority are often broadly experienced, widely traveled, and lettered women and men. I didn't say lazy people. They're often diligent, hardworking, determined, driven even. I said unrighteous. Their hearts have not been changed. Proverbs is an interesting book. When you look up the word righteous, you will find it mentioned dozens of times. Proverbs 12:5 says, "The thoughts of the righteous are just, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful." Here's another one, 29:2. When the righteous increase, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, people groan. Example, Iraq. Classic example of an unregenerate man in charge of a country, and the people have been groaning for years under that regime. Before the world can be turned right side up, the righteous must somehow become the majority and be in authority. All of this to say, as you turn with me to Revelation chapter 20, that is exactly what will occur in the future kingdom age, commonly called by theologians the millennium. M-I-L-L-E is the Latin word for thousand. Annum is the word for year. Put the words together, millennium, thousand year, the reign of Christ, which will come immediately after he has returned to this earth, judged the wicked, and introduced the golden age. The golden age. Military forces will be disbanded. All armaments and the machinery of warfare will be melted down and turned into implements of peace. Poverty will end. Prosperity will be the watchword across every continent. There will be peace. Wrong will no longer rule the land. Justice will no longer be asleep or ignored. That's the golden age. It's the age that poets write about and prophets predict. It will not happen in our age, but it will happen after the tribulation, the time of judgment on the earth. Let me clarify something. When you and I, as Christians, are taken off the earth at the rapture, it leaves only unsaved on the earth. Makes sense? They're left behind, as you've read in the popular series of books. Left behind with believers gone to be with the Lord. Many of these unbelievers will come to know Christ, and they will begin to live their lives, and it will be dreadfully difficult for them to carry out their life of Christ under the regime of the one who will be in charge of the world, called the beast and the false prophet. Now, at the beginning of the tribulation will be only unsaved, some of whom will come to Christ. When Christ returns to the earth, he will judge all of the unsaved and remove them, leaving only believers to start the millennium. Got it? So at the beginning of the tribulation, only the lost, some of whom come to Christ. At the beginning of the kingdom age, only believers, many of whom later, who will be born to those believers, will turn against the Lord. But that's later on in my message. Let's not jump there before we develop the thought of the golden age. Now, what's needed for this to happen? What kind of equation do we need to have a world at peace? First of all, we need Satan bound and removed. Second, we need Jesus reigning as the supreme monarch. Third, we need the righteous, God's righteous people who are in a glorified state without a sin nature, ruling over the cities, the counties, the states, the countries, the continents of the world. And that's exactly what will happen in this golden age yet future. And we're going to read of all three right here. And first, in the focus of John's camera lens is Satan. John says, I saw an angel, chapter 20, verse 1. The angel is not named, but he has the responsibility of carrying the key to the abyss. The abyss is a temporary place of incarceration of the demons. In the abyss, which we visited earlier in our study of Revelation, we saw demons coming out. Here, this angel comes with the key, so apparently there is a sealing of it open only by the use of this key, if you will. And he has the key in his hand, and he has a great chain in his hand. Now, the chain obviously is symbolic because you don't chain a spirit being, but it's the picture of being bound. Verse 2, he, the angel, laid hold of the dragon, the serpent, the devil, even Satan. Now, the binding is real. Satan will be bound. He will no longer have influence over the earth as he has had throughout our lifetime and the lifetimes of our parents and ever since Adam and Eve fell in the garden. Now, the angel is said to lay hold of the dragon. This is one who has a beast-like nature, pictured in Revelation 12 times as a dragon. And in case you don't know who that is, he then says he's the serpent. That would take you to Genesis 3, the Garden of Eden, where Satan first appeared to Eve and Adam, remember? And he didn't first appear as a snake on his belly. The crawling on the belly was the result of the curse. There was something attractive, dazzling, and beautiful as Lucifer made himself into a very attractive being that would cause Eve to be curious and to listen to his appealing words as he encouraged her to eat of the forbidden fruit. The word serpent takes us all the way back to Genesis 3, deceitful, tempting. The third word, which is his title, is the devil. The word means slanderer or accuser. He's been doing that as long as there have been believers on the earth. So this angel lays hold of the slanderer, even Satan. 53 times in the scriptures, this evil one is called Satan. It means adversary, one who opposes. And please observe, the angel, without a fight, without any wrestling, without any struggle, simply seizes him and binds him for 1,000 years. Notice what he does with him. Verse 3. The angel threw him into the abyss and shut it and sealed it over him. Why? So that he would not deceive the nations any longer until the 1,000 years were completed. And John adds, and we'll develop it at verse 7 through 9, after these things he must be released for a short time. But let's not go there yet. Not unlike Saddam Hussein, who, after reigning as the dictator over the country of Iraq, was found later in a spider hole and finally was incarcerated and placed in a cell. Satan will be removed from his role of authority and will be reduced to a prisoner in the abyss for this period of time. There will be, as a result, the reigning of Christ on the earth. Notice the end of verse 4. They came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. End of verse 6. They will be priests of God and of Christ and will reign with him for 1,000 years. Now, I'll come to those reigning third, but let me just deal with Jesus' reign second here. First and foremost, that is in chapter order, is the binding of Satan. So he's removed. To turn the world right side up, you got to have his influence off the earth. Second, you got to have Jesus reigning. And he will literally reign in bodily form, and his throne, his place of authority, will be the city of Jerusalem. The focus of the world will again return to the Holy Land. Jesus will reign as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We'll not take the time to turn now, but the prophets of the Old Testament are full of comments regarding this age that is yet to come. There will be international peace. There will be a productive earth agriculturally. There will be health. There will be relief. There will be prosperity. There will be a longer span of life as people exist in this, quote, perfect environment. John Phillips, in his book, Exploring Revelation, writes this. Every man will have all that his heart can desire. There will be no prisons, no hospitals, no mental institutions, no barracks, no saloons, no houses of ill repute, no gambling dens, no homes for the aged and infirm. Such things belong to a past and lesser age. The bloom of youth is on everyone's cheek, for one will be a stripling at the age of 100 years. Cemeteries will crumble as relics of the past, and tears will be few. The wolf and the lamb, the calf and the lion, the cow and the bear, the child and the scorpion are all at peace. Jesus has come, and the millennium is here, the golden age so frequently heralded by prophets of Israel's past has dawned at last, and the earth is filled with the knowledge of God. Jesus is Lord, and he rules the nations with a rod of iron. His reign is righteous, and the nations obey. Phillips has a little fun as he concludes. One can picture a schoolboy reading an ancient book sometime during the second half of the millennium. "Say, Dad," he asks, "what is an intercontinental ballistic missile?" To which Dad replies, "Go ask your mother." Some things never change, do they? The mother, being questioned, will answer, "I don't know, some kind of cabbage, maybe." Go and ask your dad. What a day that will be. To us, it seems fantasy land, almost to the edge of foolishness. Our life is shaped by war, fighting, infighting, struggles, grudges, revenge, road rage, flying off at the handle, turning against the things that are right, frivolous lawsuits, and on, it's gotten to the place where we're hardly surprised. In that day, there'll be none of that. Legal corruption will be unheard of. It will be swift and fair, as Jesus rules with a rod of iron. Sexual perversion will be a thing of the past. Physical afflictions no longer a plague. National and civil rebellion, even personal prejudice and emotional conflicts will be faded memories. But keep in mind, I remind you of this, you'll need to remember it later. The heart of those children born to the believers will not be redeemed. And there will apparently be large families and pleasantries of home life as families grow and learn together. Remember, Satan may be gone, Jesus may be reigning, but the heart of humanity is not changed, even in a perfect environment. We'll see that in spades in a moment. Let me give you the third factor for this golden age to be complete. Satan is bound, Jesus reigns, and now the righteous rule under Jesus' authority. John now sees a panorama of God's resurrected saints from this era yet future. You and I will be reigning with Christ. We are the armies who return with him, chapter 19, verse 14. And that seems to be the antecedent to chapter 20, verse 4, they will reign. Notice verse 4, I saw thrones and they sat on them. Best to connect that back to the believers who return with Christ at his second coming. We will be glorified. We will have new natures. We will be without an old sin nature. We will have access to heaven and earth, just as Jesus in his post-resurrection body. We will be able to see as he sees, judge as he would judge. We will be obedient to the nth degree. There will not even be in us who have been glorified by then the possibility of disobedience. So our reign with him and our rulership will be fair and just as his is. Thank you.
It's hard to imagine such a world. You're listening to the Bible teaching of Chuck Swindoll. Keep listening to Insight for Living because there's much more to learn about this 1,000-year reign of Jesus Christ. Chuck titled today's message, Turning the World Right Side Up. It's one of many sermons included in our study in Revelation. And if you'd like to dig deeper into the book on your own, I want to highlight a practical resource that we've prepared just for you. It's a set of three spiral-bound workbooks. We call these resources our Searching the Scriptures Bible Studies. The set for Revelation is titled Unveiling the End. To purchase these Bible study workbooks, call us at 800-772-8888 or go online to insight.org/workbooks. The month of July marks our 45th anniversary as a nonprofit ministry. And all of us here at Insight for Living believe our best years of ministry are in front of us as people continue to see the relevance of God's Word in every aspect of their lives. Well, in this new season of ministry that's laid out before us, we're inviting you to give generously so others will benefit from daily Bible teaching for the next 45 years, just as you have. And when you give a donation today, we'd like to say thank you by providing a refreshing booklet written by Chuck. It's called Leisure, God's Model for Recharging. Surprisingly, many people carry a measure of guilt about taking time off from the heavy demands of life. And yet, relaxation is God's idea. You can request your copy of Chuck's booklet on leisure when you give a donation to support the ministry of Insight for Living. To send a check in the mail, write to us at Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. You can also call us at 800-772-8888 or give online at insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his message called Turning the World Right Side Up, Thursday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Turning the World Right Side Up, was copyrighted in 2004, 2007, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.